Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good. That's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
Cash 'em or trash 'em. What are your hot takes? What are your overreactions that you want to sell to us? We'll have our own, but you can participate as well. What are your hot takes and overreactions that the Killer Bees can cash or trash? 713-780-3776. Adrian will start it off on the text line. That Yuli signing a deal with the Space Cowboys ain't looking like a bad idea now, right? Cash 'em or trash 'em. Yeah, I guess we got to cash that. That wouldn't have been a very bad idea. It wouldn't have been a bad idea at all, Adrian. I'm cashing it.
But from his perspective, it would have been a horrible idea because he's making major league money, and he's making Miami look good for doing it.
Well, yeah, we were never looking at it from Yuli's perspective, though. We're looking at it from the Astros' perspective and their point of view. So, yeah, I'm cashing that one. Joe, cashing, trashing the Yuli in the offseason, signed him to a minor league deal like Adrian suggested back then?
I'm going
to
cash it because he signed a minor league deal with Miami, and then they just moved him up.
Yeah. Yeah, would have been a good thing to do for the Houston Astros. You were right, Adrian. We were wrong. All right, Blankers, you got one?
No.
All right, I'll lead it off. More players should go the non-agent route. Lamar Jackson got 5 years, $260 million, $185 million in guarantees, part of which is a $72.5 million signing bonus, the biggest ever. The $52 million per year, the biggest in the NFL. No trade clause, no tag either whenever the contract is up in 5 years. Lamar Jackson hit it out of the park. More players. We saw Laremy Tunsil at the beginning of the offseason. The big deal that he got. More players should go the non-agent route and stop paying these agents a huge premium.
I'm going to trash that. Simply because of the fact that I think you're right, and I would have cashed it if it was just the big name superstar type players, because Clyde Drexler used to do his own contracts. And when you're a big time player, they're not going to try and screw you over.
Was this before or after he was clubbing Baby Seals?
That was when he was a broadcaster, yes. As a player, he did his own contracts. He did his own contracts, I'm sure, as a broadcaster too. Those were only done with Les. Those were the ones I wasn't involved in because Les loved him. From the standpoint of this, I think there's too many. You have to trust the team. And you know it's harder. It's a business. And both player and teams always find ways where they get bitter or things change. I think there's too many organizations that would try to pull fast ones with just average players signing contracts to put clauses in that they probably or hopefully wouldn't catch.
They're going to get an attorney to read over the contract.
Are they?
Absolutely.
I mean, they should. I think even Clyde did. He had a professor at UCLA.
Yeah, I mean, they're not just willy nilly signing a contract that they have no idea what's in it. But they're going to pay an attorney probably an hourly rate to overlook it, as opposed to paying whatever percentage it is of the contract.
Yeah,
saving them millions of dollars.
I'd be leery of teams trying to kind of pull the wool over some players' eyes in terms of like outs and just little things in contracts that you really, agents really are savvy about picking up.
All right, so he's trashing them. What about you, Joe George?
I'm going to trash this as well.
Trash.
I think that if Lamar Jackson had an agent, he could have facilitated that agent, male or female, could have facilitated a trade to another team in which he would have got the fully guaranteed contract that Deshaun Watson got.
So you think he lost money in this deal?
Yeah, I do. I think he could have gotten more money if, like, and first of all, you also have all the negative press. Like, there was no positive press from Lamar Jackson in this because they didn't have the agent going to Adam Schefter and being like, well, the Ravens are saying this. It was all negative towards Lamar. And yeah, it worked out in the end. But he also should have had an agent because he could have got this done 2 years ago. Like,
it's just kicking.
I'll tell you where
he
lost the most money.
Yeah.
Endorsements. Like, if he had an agent, he'd have a shoe deal. He'd have multiple, he would have a boat ton of extra cash with endorsement deals that I don't think his mom is. They've turned down shoe deals too, which is just unbelievable to me. When the fact you're going to wear spikes on the field and wear shoes all the time, and if team, shoe companies are going to throw like major millions and millions of dollars at you, you should have one of those deals. I don't care if you're picky or super picky about your feet or whatever. That's all fine and dandy. You're still going to find one of those. New Balance is throwing money at people. He should have endorsement deals, and he doesn't have them.
Fair.
All right. What do you got, Joe George?
All right. The Houston Texans will not Well, they won't pick in the first round anyways. But their selection, their selection will not be in the top three next year. The top three of the 2024 NFL draft, with the first pick, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The second pick, the Las Vegas Raiders. And the third pick, the Indianapolis Colts.
Hmm.
That's my top three next year.
I'm trashing this right out of the gate.
Why?
I could cash half of this. I don't think the Texans pick will be top three. I think it's very likely it'll be top five,
okay,
and not
so you
top
like that
three.
Part. You don't like my bottom three.
I'll cash that part. I'll completely trash your top three.
Trash.
I don't think the Raiders finish with a bottom three record.
I think the Colts finish with a bottom three record.
I think the Colts are going to be better than the Texans. The team that you totally missed on here was the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
You're trashing your own. Cash
I forgot about
trashing.
The Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm trashing it, too. But I also, I'll keep saying I want to be wrong. But aside from the Cardinals, I really believe the Texans aren't there yet. I believe that they're on the right path. I believe the draft was great.
I didn't say it wouldn't be top five.
I just think they're going to be top three.
Yeah, I think.
Well, their pick would have been top three.
The other team, the other teams I was looking at was the Commies. I think they're going to be pretty bad with Sam.
Who did they play quarterback?
Sam Howell.
Sam Howell, best 6-round quarterback in NFL history.
Carolina.
I know that Brady was a 6-round pick.
Carolina, I think, is an interesting one. They got a good defense, but like they have nothing on offense besides Bryce. I know they have Miles Sanders now. I keep forgetting that he signed there.
They signed Adam Thielen.
How was a 5th-rounder, by the way? You love old guys.
I don't love old guys.
You love old guys.
I couldn't find him before, and then I realized he signed with Carolina, so now I remembered it, so I threw him out there.
I kind of feel like there's a chance the Rams have a top three pick.
The Rams are hard to like put
do
a
they
finger
own
on.
It? Or did they give it away?
They do. They actually have like their first. Like, they're one of those teams when you talk about tank for Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
The idea of him walking across the street.
That'd be awesome.
From USC to LA to the Rams.
Into McVay.
Like, into McVay. Oh, yeah. Like, if you're going to tank out, like, Stafford's hurt. Cooper Kupp is hurt. And then, like, what else do you have?
It's hard for me to imagine if they stay healthy, and that's a big if, that they're going to be that bad, though.
No.
Like, if Stafford's, like, okay, Cooper Kupp's coming back. He was the best receiver in football 2 years ago. Cam Akers is fine. And they still have Aaron Donald. Like, they're a stars and scrubs team. Like, they're almost like the Angels of the past, where they have, like, some stars and the rest of their team's pretty lousy. I just have a hard time with that core that they – and McVay, too, if we think he's a great head coach, that they finish with 4 or 5 wins.
The other team, by the way, stay healthy, the Green Bay Packers, because they're going to get Caleb Williams.
I don't think they're going to be that bad.
You would hate that, wouldn't you, Joe George?
And with every ounce of my
– Yep.
I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be like a 7-10, 8-19.
I would rather the Bears finish like third in the division and not with a top five pick. Then Caleb Williams end up a Packer. Like, I would rather the Bears like know that Justin Fields isn't their quarterback and they can't get Caleb Williams versus Caleb Williams becoming a Green Bay Packer.
Yeah.
Like, that makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, I don't blame it.
And I know that right now there's hope it could happen.
Maybe it's the tuna.
Remember the other thing that you said about the three most improved versus the least improved?
The Packers
Green Bay and Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Atlanta's in that conversation, too.
I found one that – there's a couple that I found. The first one that came to mind was Chinny Agumuke on the NBA the other night said that these NBA playoffs are a coming-out party for Devin Booker to become a superstar. Did I miss something, or is Devin Booker not already a superstar?
Yeah, I'm going to trash that tank. Devin Booker's already a superstar.
I think Devin Booker just is – with every game that he plays is showing you – just how many skills that a lot of people weren't. They think he's a shooter and a scorer. The fact that he brings the ball up the floor, that he creates, that he does the things that he does outside of the 3-point line, I think it's been extremely impressive. And dare I say, the Suns have played like a better team without Chris Paul.
They have played like a better team without Chris Paul. They're a little faster, which I think bodes well for that team. So I'll cash that one as well. Joe George?
Yeah, I'm going to trash that. Devin Booker's a superstar.
Yeah.
Trash just, her exact quote, by I the mean, way,
that could have
was
been
even worse.
Boulevard.
A star is born. I feel like this playoff run, it feels like Devin Booker has arrived and a star is born.
Yeah,
she's not been a multi-time All-Star.
She wanted to use that line, I think. A star is born.
Oh, she pre-wrote it.
She wanted to use
fill in the gaps.
Yeah, she likes that movie with Lady Gaga and wanted to
Bradley Cooper.
That's right.
That movie's
sad.
That's
right. Stars. That movie is sad. It's pretty good. Low key,
it's a
decent
remake.
Movie.
Oh, it's a remake.
You know how Lady Gaga got her name?
by a baby that kept making noises?
Radio Gaga by the Queen.
Oh.
Yep. 7891, Trevor Bauer would have been a better signing than Jose Abreu. Cashing or trashing that?
Trash.
Well, there's Joe George's thoughts on that one. He just pounded the trash button. Yeah. Trevor Bauer got lit up last night.
That's why. Really? He gave up like 7 earned runs last night. And come on.
Yeah, I'm so out.
He's not good.
He's a cheater. And all the other offensive things
he might still
that he
have
does.
After a strikeout, but he got lit up in the Nippon League yesterday.
I won't shed a single tear over that one.
No.
I might celebrate it.
Trevor, like, there's Jose Abreu is like baseball bad. Like, yeah. You know, we're going to kill Jose Abreu until he somehow comes out of this, if he ever does. Trevor Bauer is just like bad.
Trevor Bauer
would have been a worse signing. I'm trashing this.
Trevor Bauer gave up in 6 innings pitch, gave up 11 hits, 7 runs, 6 of them earned, no walks, 8 strikeouts, 3 home runs.
Hey, he struck out 8, so he did the samurai sword 8 times, I guess.
Trash.
Oh, yeah, we're trashing that one. How about this one? I'm curious what y'all are going to think about this. Yiner Diaz will make at least one all-star team in his professional career.
I'll cash that. I think that what we've seen of him defensively is more than I expected. Obviously, his arm is unbelievable. I think that he's going to get better behind the plate in terms of with framing and or sports psychologist and every other thing that goes with catcher. And I think catcher is a very underappreciated, underrated position. And we don't see we see JT Realmuto, but we don't see any like really big. I think it can rotate in terms of you have a good start to a year, you can make an all-star team. I'll cash that.
I'll cash it because you said make a team. Unless Adley Rutschman gets hurt, he'll never start.
He doesn't have to start, yeah.
But, like, Adley Rutschman is going to be the starting catcher for the American League
really good.
For the next 20 years.
I asked the
That kid is a monster. Yep.
I asked the TV voice of the Baltimore Orioles in the offseason because I was doing all my best ball drafts for Major League Baseball. I said, give me an Oriole that I need to be drafting. He said Adley Rutschman. And yeah. I was like, yeah. I was like, he's a catcher. Is he going to get a plate appearance? He goes, Adley Rutschman.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. What he's done so early on in his career already, like, he's a monster.
See, I think Yiner Diaz, I still don't notice him being bad defensively. He had a couple of blocks in the dirt yesterday that were really nice. And, like, I don't think whenever people talk about Yiner Diaz being bad defensively, they're talking about his pop time and his cannon of an arm. They're talking about him receiving. Like, is he blocking balls in the dirt? Is he framing? Some of the frames yesterday were not great. But balls in the dirt, he's better at blocking balls in the dirt than Maldi is.
That's why, like, actually, the Astros...
Maldi looks like he's got a whole lot of I don't care.
And Maldi tries to pick them instead of blocking them a lot. Whereas Yiner Diaz, like, a good athlete, like, where he's blocking the balls into the plate like you're supposed to as a catcher.
I think the Astros are taking their approach about Yiner Diaz totally backwards. Like, I think Martin Maldonado should be the guy catching Hunter Brown. A veteran catcher that, like, can guide him through... calm him down, like, when his stuff's not hitting right, when he's getting squeezed, like his last start before last night. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where Maldi should be. Like, it should be the coach on the field, and Yiner Diaz should be catching Javier.
He should be the coach in the dugout. He should be the coach.
Joe Espada's going to get a job, and Maldi's going to be your bench coach.
I'd be cool with that. Yep. I'll cash that.
I think that'd
cash
be great.
Him.
I think
cash
that'd
them.
Be great. And I think that, you know, he could learn what he doesn't know about the coaching managerial side.
What if he just pulls the David Ross? David Ross literally went from Cubs player
to Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars.
Yadier Molina is trying to do the same thing, right? He was the head coach in the WBC
for Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah, he wants to be a manager.
Beltran was going to do it.
Could Maldonado just be the manager of the Astros next year?
No, I don't think so. I think it's too good of a team for that to happen.
Yeah, because like the Cubs are bad, the Mets were meh.
Yeah,
when Beltran was taken over,
I think it's too good of a team for that.
But, like, I think Yadi could be the manager of the Cardinals next year,
probably.
If not this season, with the way they're going,
God, how bad are they?
I would love Maldonado as the bench coach next year. It means he's not starting 120 games. You got your last one, Joe?
No.
All right.
Time to break.
Mike Budenholzer. Everybody's saying that Mike Budenholzer didn't deserve to be fired and he got a raw deal. I think you sign up for this job. I think the fact that you've got to appease a superstar and the fact that, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it than just wins and losses. He's going to get paid no matter what. I think the Bucks made the right move moving on from Mike Budenholzer because they've got to appease their superstar and they got to win games.
The problem with it, like, I don't disagree, but Budenheiser's been fired twice after, like, good stints. In Atlanta and then Milwaukee. Like, he won a title in Milwaukee. They had a good stint in Atlanta, and he got sacked both times.
The last four coaches to win the NBA championship have been fired except for Steve Kerr.
That's fascinating.
Because it's Nick Nurse,
I saw that.
Budenholzer, I don't even remember who the other one is, and then Steve Kerr has his job. Well, that's like when Dwayne Casey got fired by the Raptors and
coach
then
of the year.
One coach of the year like 3 days later.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He got fired. Yeah, he got cut.
I think he'd already been fired by the time they announced.
No, I think that's right. Yeah, no, he had been fired.
He was rumored to get it. They fired him, and then he got the award.
I think he had like almost taken the Pistons job at that point by the time he got Coach of the Year.
I think that's so right.
That's incredible.
It's one of my favorite stories. All right, that does it for Cash Them or Trash Them. If you have any more that you want us to cash or trash, just tweet them at Pac-Man Joel.
I need them.
What is it going to take for the Texans to earn the benefit of the doubt from people that aren't giving them the benefit of the doubt? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
One thing I find interesting when it comes to the Houston Texans is kind of like the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the Texans. They've won 11 games in 3 years. They're coming off a three-win season. The fallout, I know it's been a while, of O'Brien as a GM, as Easterby as a GM. A lot of people in this city have talked about how the Texans are never going to win anything with Kyle McNair as the owner. I think people in this city kind of give the Texans the benefit of the doubt. I don't really know why. Like, you're also the same people that have been ridiculing Kyle and, you know, the whole history of the Houston Texans. Is it because they brought in DeMeco? Is it because you're believing in Nick Caserio? Is it because you believe in Hannah McNair? Like, why do you give the Texans the benefit of the doubt? Maybe it's DeMeco. Maybe it's Nick. Maybe it's Hannah. Maybe it's Cal. Let us know. 713-780-3776. People in this city are quick to give the Texans the benefit of the doubt. But if you look nationally, they're not. Right? You look at The Ringer, who ripped this trade the other day, and I don't want to dive in details of this trade because we talked about it all the way to exhaustion. Bill Simmons ripping the Houston Texans. National people talking about the state of the Texans and how they're one of the worst teams in the NFL, that they've been a joke of an organization these last few years. So nationally, they don't give the Texans the benefit of the doubt. Locally, some do give the Houston Texans the benefit of the doubt. Not all. But some, whether it's fans, whether it's the highway to hell, whether it's people that like the draft because they want to pander to the popular opinion, et cetera, et cetera. This is more to the people that maybe it's national, maybe it's people that are more cynical about the Houston Texans than anything else. What is it going to take for the Houston Texans to earn the benefit of the doubt across the board? From everybody, nationally, the cynics here locally, you know, the fair weather fans are going to be the fair weather fans, are the fanboys, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But what is it going to take for the Texans to earn the benefit of the doubt for those that are still doubting the Houston Texans?
I think you're going to have to see the proof in the pudding. You're going to have to see a coach that has a full grasp on the situation. You're going to have to see the level of play come up. And that now there's more pressure on it to get those wins. I still don't think in terms of getting people to stay encouraged and positive about this team, it doesn't have to be the kind of wins, you know, the wins increasing by as many as a lot of people would think. I think that if you see your draft picks continue, you know, they perform, especially Anderson and Stroud, but of course, you're going to look at every draft pick because your fourth round pick a year ago became your best offensive player. And so if Nick Caserio continues to hit on picks that turn out to be productive players for this franchise, and you see that I think the biggest thing is that you took out the trash. You got rid of Bill O'Brien, then you got rid of Jack Easterby. You got rid of coaches that weren't leading you in the right direction. I think Nick is the one that is still on a hot seat that are people going to hyper-analyze. But I think overall you're seeing the kinder, gentler Cal McNair. I thought it was amusing that Hannah was jumping in and finishing answers to questions and basically looked like a ventriloquist with her hand on Cal's back during the press conferences. But if that helps to give the national perception of an organization that more looks like it knows what it's doing, it helps to kind of soothe a lot of the open wounds that were created and that the Texans fans had to deal with over the last 3 years.
6002 says win football games. 4272, Texans are winning 8 games this year. I don't like, and maybe that's what he means by like, this is what it's going to take for the Texans to get the benefit of the doubt. Because I think you can compare it to, let's just say, the Astros. Like, the Astros they've won 2 World Series, been to 4, 6 straight ALCSs. The Astros are under 500 on May 9th, and we all still think the Astros are going to go back to the playoffs because the Astros have earned the benefit of the doubt. I don't believe the Texans have earned the benefit of the doubt. You know, are we excited about the young roster? Look, I'm excited about Stroud, see what he can become in the NFL. I'm excited to see Damian Pierce in a very West Coast, San Francisco-style offense, what he can produce in year two. I'm excited about John Metchie. I think he could be the steal of some fantasy football drafts. And I'm super excited about Tank Dell in the NFL. I think defensively, they have a chance to be a top half of the NFL defense by like week 7 or 8. I don't think they're going to start off that way because they have a lot of young players. But I'm excited about Will Anderson. See what he looks like on the football field. Stingley, Petrie in year two, Harris in year two, with D'Amico Ryans, who's like the perfect head coach for Christian Harris.
Ward, who takes that system and kind of implements it
in the
huddle.
I'm not that excited to see Ward.
I like it from the staff. He's going to help the younger guys.
I think so, too. I think so, too.
He knows the system. He knows what D'Amico calls. So he's going to help them kind of get acclimated to it and know where they need to be.
I just don't think he has a lot of ball
left. I think
left.
Rankin's on the defensive line has a tendency underrated to do some free damage. Agent, yeah, signing. I think it was a really good pickup. And if you see another good year from Stevie Nelson, and you get anything more like you did a year ago from Jerry Hughes, uh-huh, I think you have the chance to be a decent defense.
There's a lot of questions, I think, with any sports team, especially in the NFL, salary cap league, a league that's built on parity. I just don't know how the Texans get the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it is as simple as just wins. Maybe wins
really
is the
simple.
Answer. For me, I don't love win-loss record being the measure of like where the organization is going. Like even the Rams, who won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, that organization, after they won this, they peaked, mm-hmm, right? Because they went all in. They sold their soul,
kind of
draft
Marlins
picks, yeah, for the Super Bowl title. And then they had nothing left, and they've now sold some pieces off. I think it's more about the upward trajectory. Like, do they still make solid moves? And I know that, like, the trade for Anderson, people are calling that normal because they drafted Stroud. They got Anderson. Normal move. You got the quarterback. You got the best defensive player, et cetera, et cetera. I think that you have to see the Texans kind of continuing to make the right move. It doesn't need to translate to 9 wins next year, but you need to see that upward trajectory and to stop seeing the debacle of things that we've seen in the past with this organization.
It's funny, but you take the conversation you and I had a year ago about Davis Mills and what we needed to see out of this Texans team, and I was quick to say, you don't need to see wins and losses, but you need to see sustainable drives, a team that looks like it knows what it's doing. I think that translates to what we're talking about here. Obviously, because of the trade, wins and losses are what everybody wants to see. They want to see more wins. They want to see a better record than the Browns. But if you see C.J. Stroud is going to make some mistakes, but he's keeping you in ball games. He's leading sustainable drives that lead to points. The same guys that you saw a year ago perform, like Pierce, like some of the guys you've already seen, are continuing to progress. You're seeing Dalton Schultz do some things. You're seeing the rookies do some things. You're understanding that you're in ball games, and then maybe at the end of the game you're beaten by a better team or a better quarterback. People are going to be like, you know what? In a year or two, that's going to be us. That's going to beat a team that's not as good, just for the lack, because they're still lacking some players.
What was your thing?
Yeah, I think it's really simple. C.J. Stroud has to be a superstar quarterback.
Superstar in year one?
Or a star quarterback. Because let's look at the most dysfunctional organizations in the NFL that we no longer call dysfunctional, and what has really changed. Like, the Jacksonville Jaguars are one of the worst organizations in the NFL. Like, they couldn't find a quarterback. They were awful at hiring coaches on a consistent basis. Yes, they had one cute little AFC title run, but like, we all know they were frauds with Blake Bortles. But like, they were generally a bad franchise. It was Byron Leftwich who went there and said, I'll take this job in Jacksonville if you fire Trent Baalke. Trent Baalke is a GM who fired 3 coaches in 3 years and then got fired for it. But because they have Trevor Lawrence, because the future is bright with Trevor, they're all of a sudden considered a good organization.
I think they have a respected coach, too.
And that helps, mm-hmm, and that's where D'Amico factors in. And I'm going to go the same. It's the same thing with the Cincinnati Bengals. They got their coach right, and they got their quarterback right. The Cincinnati Bengals are a joke. They have been for so long. But Joe Burrow, all of a sudden, none of that history matters.
But I think it's an element of winning attached to that, though.
It does.
Because we weren't saying the same thing about Trevor Lawrence in his rookie year.
Well, I'm not saying the Texans are going to accomplish this in 1 year.
Right.
Like, it's going to, like, yeah, I think you have to win a playoff game for this to help. But, like, in reality, if you have a coach and you have a quarterback, it just wipes away the dysfunction. Like, everything that happened bad with the Jags and the Bengals, no one is going to ever talk about it again because they have their two main stalwarts and, like, they can move forward as a franchise. If the Texans have C.J. Stroud and D'Amico and they move forward as a winning organization, then you earn the benefit of the doubt from the national media, even though the McNair family, just like Shad Khan and his family, just like the Bengals owners, they probably don't deserve it, to be honest. But you got your quarterback right, and you got your coach right for the first time ever.
But don't you feel also, too, as it relates to nationally, you got to stop kicking yourself in the groin? You got the self-inflicted wounds about just all the different, from the Easterby hire to what control what you can control. You obviously couldn't control Watson and what he was doing, but it was a bad look, and it was an obvious, you know, blemish on your organization.
100%.
But the Easterby thing was a joke. The Culley hire was a joke.
It was, but like, if CJ and D'Amico are good, then like, does it matter?
I think Will Anderson is going to be evaluated like it matters.
Yeah, but I think it's different, though. I think that's a different conversation, because now you're talking about the trade versus what do the Texans have to do to, like,
right,
earn the benefit of the doubt.
You're going to lose people if they start looking at that trade like it was a huge mistake.
Like, why?
But if Stroud looks like a top 10 quarterback that can win an MVP and potentially win a Super Bowl, I don't think that we will still criticize the trade, because it's what we do, but it's going to be a much softer landing, and the Texans have hope, the Texans have future, and the Texans have earned the benefit of the doubt because they have a quarterback that they could potentially win with.
The problem with Joe's analogy, though, is the fact that as much as I think in the long term Stroud could be that guy, I think we already know in year one, even the really good ones aren't that guy.
Yeah, but it's not year one, though. Like, we're talking about, what do the Texans have to do to change the whole benefit of the doubt? It doesn't need to be immediate. That's to Joe's point. Like, let's hit it on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. What do the Texans have to do to earn the benefit of the doubt for the people that still are doubting the Texans? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One thing that already has earned the benefit of the doubt with everybody that has tried it, it's Gentle Ben. And it's a great pleasure of mine to tell you about Gentle Ben for a variety of reasons. At the top of that list is because Gentle Ben is simply the best. Whether it's the vodka, the best vodka made in this state, the gin, best in the market, or the bourbon, the double platinum winner at the prestigious Ascot Awards. Gentle Ben uses their innovative Persado craft technology that makes them better across the board. They sweep every category. Purity, aroma, taste, there are tops in the industry in them all. You'll love what's not in Gentle Ben. Their purification process is unrivaled. It is smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. Don't labor through your drink. Enjoy it. Savor it. And you can do that with Gentle Ben. Head over to GentleBen.com. Find out more there. But get your favorite bottle at your favorite liquor store today on the way home. Total Wine carries it. Specs carry it. Many of the other local stores carry Gentle Ben as well. Stop by. Get a bottle on the way home today. If you're looking for some plans, you have a little bit of time, head over to Alvin. Stop by the tasting room, the Gentle Ben tasting room. A great time and great drinks. Or you can stop by the Gentle Ben bar if you're headed to the Astros games. Just to the left of the Crawford boxes inside of Minute Maid Park, and right when you walk in, the Union Station entrance. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Ben.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What will it take for the Texans to earn the benefit of the doubt for those that still have doubt about the Houston Texans? Which, look, I think it's perfectly fair if you have doubt about the Texans. They've won 11 games in 3 years. People were saying the Cal needed to sell the franchise. People wanted Nick Caserio fired after Week 18. And what has changed since then is that you brought in a respected head coach in D'Amico Ryans. You drafted C.J. Stroud, the number two pick of the NFL draft, widely thought of to be the second best quarterback prospect in this draft. And then you traded up for Will Anderson, who, outside of Jalen Carter and the red flags he had, widely considered the best defensive prospect in this draft. And now people are starting to believe, but there's still some doubters out there. What is it going to take for the Texans to earn the benefit of the doubt? Joe brought up the point about Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence, you know, and turning into, you know, year one, we were calling him a bust potentially, you know, didn't have help with Urban Meyer. And then year two takes that step with the help of Doug Peterson, wins a playoff game in really weird fashion. And now people are starting to believe in Jacksonville more and more.
I think just making the playoffs, though, got people juiced.
It did for sure. But like, look at the draft. Like, if Will Anderson's a bust, then the Texans are a disaster or just doesn't play well, and another pass rusher plays really well, it's going to be a major talking point around the NFL that the Texans made a mistake. Anyone talking about Trevon Walker being picked over Aiden Hutchinson?
It's quieter.
Like, all of a sudden, like, they get the benefit of the doubt. But like, if Jacksonville missed the playoffs last year and Hutchinson, you know, played the way he did in Detroit, like, it's a topic of conversation. But right now, like, you kind of get a pass.
I wouldn't call it a pass. Like, some people still bring up that they missed with Walker over Hutch, but it's just a softer landing.
Exactly.
It's easier to swallow. It's easier to look past because you have a playoff team with a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I think also, too, when you start getting, instead of just doing the year-to-year short-term kind of flyer contracts on free agents, if you do what Jacksonville did a couple years ago when they got three guys to come in where you committed some years and some money and probably overpaid a little bit, but you showed that they wanted to be on your team and you were willing to take the swing to kind of add to your team, and it adds even, you know, it has a chance to add a bigger punch to what they've already done in the draft, I think people would take notice. I think the national people would definitely take notice. I think the fans would be juiced up and they would say, okay, now we've endured the worst of this. Now the uptick is coming, and now there's a chance to be really, really good.
I think you can even look at Deshaun Watson as an example before the perverted stuff. The Texans won four games with Deshaun Watson in his final real year as with the Texans. I know he was here a year and didn't play a snap because of the, you know, court stuff that was going on. But Deshaun Watson's final year that he played in Houston, the Texans won four games. But I still think that there was hope and belief with this organization because they had Deshaun Watson. So I agree with Joe the more I think about this. Like, if you get that quarterback where many people believe they're capable of winning a Super Bowl because they're that level of talent, because they're that good, I think you start to see a lot of the doubters jump back on board, and you start to see less and less criticism about an organization.
I think it's obvious what we always talk about, the importance of the most important position in professional sports, the quarterback, that has been the topic of conversation aside from the off the football stuff that we already highlighted. I think when you, I don't want to say master it, but when you hit on it and you've got a guy that looks like he could be the guy for the next 5, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
I think that is so hyper important to everybody's enthusiasm and everybody's belief, because we know what it's like when you don't have that guy. We don't know it from the Bears' perspective or the Browns' perspective or teams that have just waddled in mediocrity and swings and misses. So you know when you get the guy that gives you that kind of extra oomph that, hey, he's our guy now. Now we know who the successor to Deshaun is, who's our next franchise quarterback. Now everything gets more exciting, and even losses are more digestible because you know you've got a guy that's on the cusp.
Yeah, 7-4-4-2, if Stroud is the guy, everything else falls into play. Simple as that. I tend to agree. Like,
and winning fixes everything.
There's two things. Well, even if you're not winning games, Stroud looking like a franchise quarterback will allow you to overlook the wins. If the Texans go 5-12 next year, but C.J. Stroud looks like the truth, then the winning games kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's true, because I guess, like, if you look at, like, a team like the Patriots, you know, even though they did make the playoffs with Mac Jones his rookie year.
Underrated rookie season.
The franchise was still looked upon like, oh, they're just going to continue Tom Brady's, Bill Belichick's legacy. Like, they've got their next quarterback. But then just 12 months later, I mean, they're a total joke.
But who's Mac Jones more like, though? Is he more like rookie Mac Jones, or is he more like second-year Mac Jones?
That's a good question, but it's just like, because it was such an extreme, like, uh-huh. You know, Bill Belichick could kind of get away with some weird stuff, but because they, you know, they went with what Matt Patricia is the OC, and then Mac Jones was a disaster, like, you know, the claws just come out. Like, if you're giving someone a reason to come at you, they're going to. And the Texans have given the national media, local media fans, every single reason to give them no benefit of the doubt, because...
But it doesn't feel like the reaction equals that.
I think right now it's different.
Why, though?
Because D'Amico.
Because of D'Amico?
And Jack's finally out of the building. That was the underlying laughing stock of every time anyone nationally heard Houston Texans. They're like, how did this dude get this job, get to this position, have this power, and how is he still employed? And until they got rid of him, I think it was always hanging over every opinion and every thought process when the Texans were brought up. And now I think the combination of him being out and D'Amico being in, they realize they're a real football team again.
There's three power players for the Texans, right? The McNairs, Casario, and D'Amico. I think people in the city love D'Amico, which totally understand. Nick Casario is kind of interesting to me, because if you just do like the approval rating for Nick Casario, after week 18, it was probably like at a 5. Like, I'm talking about a 1 through 100 approval rating. It was like a 5 for Nick Casario. What is that approval rating for Nick Casario today?
I think it's like an 8.
I disagree. I think it's like 55.
Oh, sorry. You said out of 100.
Yeah. I think more people will approve on 100. I think more people will approve Nick Caserio than disapprove of Nick
Caserio.
I think
he's more like 60, 65% right now because we haven't seen games. We know that the draft looks good. We know that he went for it, whether that works out or not.
That's a huge jump.
And he hired DeMeco.
That's a huge jump from after week 18.
Oh, absolutely.
That's an astronomical jump.
But part of that just goes back to like almost like the conversation from the first hour about like the improvement of the roster. Just like the belief in the organization right now should be at an all-time high because of how much of a joke it's been.
Sure.
Like even though DeMeco has not coached a single game, CJ hasn't taken a single snap, same with Will Anderson. Just like the idea is like you went from David Culley and Lovie Smith to DeMeco Ryans, one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL. You drafted what you hope is a franchise. The hope is at 100 right now. And yeah, that's why Nick Caserio gets the benefit of the doubt a little bit on that.
Maybe so, but it's interesting to me how he made that astronomical of a jump by hiring a first-year head coach that we all love and making a really questionable trade on draft day. But the approval rating has jumped that high. How about the approval rating of Cal? Like, Cal McNair last year, even after Week 18, had a super low approval rating, probably right there with Caserio at 5. People are texting us every day. Cal McNair needs to sell the team. The approval rating for him seems like it's jumped astronomically as well.
Hannah has helped a ton, and DeMeco has helped a ton.
They got a head coach, a quarterback, and they're putting Columbia Blue in their jerseys.
And also, before we wrap the segment up, but to Jeremy's point, I think the point that he was making, but also because of how it relates to how important the quarterback is. If you have a Deshaun year, the year that he took on the Legion of Boom and did all these different things, and maybe they only won 4 games, but he looked like he was mobile, he was agile, he was capable, he was athletic, he was making plays, and it looked like he was going to be a playmaker for the next 10 years, people are going to be juiced up and they're going to believe that Nick took the right guy. Because I think if Nick went the route that a lot of people thought right up till right before the pick was made, thought Nick might just pass on quarterback altogether and take defenders, I think if he'd have done that, his approval rating would have been below 50%.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's pandering to popular opinion or pandering to what they wanted, you know? Like, you wanted the quarterback, well, they got you that. And then you wanted the best defensive player, and they got you that.
Because when you don't, I mean, that's why you need burgers and uniforms. Because you're pandering to the public because the Texans are hyper-focused on being worried about their perception.
Yeah, it is interesting how the approval ratings have jumped like that. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. How much money could Shohei Ohtani make in free agency? We see Shohei Ohtani tonight, by the way, against Framber Valdez. Also, the bench had a little bit of a game, like, you know, who's most likely to do this, who's most likely to do that. We'll go through these, have a little bit of fun with it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, if you've been kind of sluggish and you don't have any energy, or really you're trying to lose weight and you need some help, maybe it's in the gym, maybe it's recovering, maybe it's you want to lose weight and you've heard that there are these new FDA-approved semi-glutide methods that can possibly lose 6 pounds a week for you. Those are all the reasons why you get in contact with Apollo Men's Health, because they have all those services and more, and they're all centered on making a difference in your daily life, giving you more energy, having you feel better, having you lose weight so you can do more. It's all part of what their plan is, and all you need to do is go to apollomh.com, see all the services they offer and the ways they can help. If a couple of those services interest you, sign up for a first appointment. When you do, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But then go in and talk to them and be honest with them and tell them, hey, I'm really having a hard time losing weight, or I really don't have enough energy day to day to get all my tasks done. They're going to put you on a plan that works. They're going to get you results. That's what they do for me and so many others that I know and that I've heard from that say Apollo has made a positive difference in my life. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you're struggling, if you have problems, they have answers. They have ways to get you into feeling and acting like your best self. They're fantastic people. You mentioned my name, Joel Blank, and on your first visit, you can get a free B12 shot, or you can get a free body composition analysis so you can measure your results, check your numbers, find out when your body fat goes down, when your muscle mass goes up, and all those important numbers that really mean something when you're trying to get better and at being physically fit. They take care of you because they care. That's why I speak for them, because I think they're the best in the business. Check them out today. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Got a great pitching matchup tonight in Anaheim. Shohei Ohtani, the strikeout per nine in the American League. Going up against Framber Valdez for the Houston Astros. See if Framber can beat Shohei and Anaheim and even the series at a game apiece. You know, one thing I like about West Coast games when they're playing like getaway day and they're playing in the middle of the day, it starts at 3:05. Mm-hmm. Like, legitimately tomorrow, I know that we have like our little bit when the Astros play like an afternoon game, little businessman special, like 1 o'clock games. We're like, oh, it starts at 3:05. Angels and Astros tomorrow start at 3:05.
That's great.
We're going to get off the show and we're going to watch the Astros while we listen to the Wheelhouse.
I hate the late night games.
I've been falling asleep and having to watch them in the morning.
Yeah, and I've been able to do that, and God bless them for finally doing that whole replay in the morning thing.
I just DVR it.
But I catch it normally at the gym the last couple innings if I do fall asleep. But I ended up staying up to watch that debacle last night, and I thought I was going to go to bed happy because they were going to win. And then the way it ended, I was a little pissed off. So that didn't exactly help me all that much. Yeah, I do like, I mean, and the afternoon getaway games are good too. I just would like to see them find a way to, kind of like the Mariners didn't look like they deserved to win 2 out of 3 from the Astros, and they did. I hope they right the ship. They beat a good pitcher tonight, and I hope that they get 2 out of 3 from the Angels and they can move forward, you know, and just keep on trucking until we get everybody healthy. Because last night was another tough one for me to stomach because I thought they had it.
How mad do you get when the Astros lose?
I don't
on a scale of 1 to 10.
Tad Brown. Does it ruin your weekend? 20 to the Bucks. I'm not punching holes in walls and like screaming and making like a fool of myself in front of my kids. I literally care enough about the team that it really agitates me, and I get a very uneasy feeling. Like when I still told you I can't sleep after that game Saturday night.
You couldn't sleep.
Yeah, I could. I was starting to fade
for
at the end of the
May.
Game when they were up 3-0.
For a game in May, you couldn't sleep.
Yeah, it bothers me because, look, I've lived it when I worked for the Rockets, and I told you that Craig and I used to keep track of the games that they really should have won, that they let get away. And then if it gets to more than a handful, it starts to be something that gets brought up more and we talk about more at the end of the season because it can cost you playoff seedings and all those things. I'm not worried about that yet from the Astros' perspective, but I care enough and I love the team enough that when they take a 3-0 lead with two outs into the bottom of the eighth inning, I feel like that's a game that they're going to win, and I'm going to feel really good about it. And then the way they lost, it's one thing to say they lost, but the way they lost and the situation that was around it, it really did bother me.
And you lost sleep.
Yeah.
Joe, you ever lose sleep about regular season baseball in May?
Sorry, no.
Yeah, I don't think
I didn't watch last night because I had no power, so I missed that one last time.
Because you believe the Cubs at all times were just gangbusters.
Sensei says you need a shot of Gentle Ben.
No, I get where you're going, Joel. I don't feel that way about regular season baseball because it's so early. Like, playoffs is different, and then, like, when you're going down the stretch. I mean, I definitely, like, say, like, there's more anxiety right now. Like, you look at the standings, you see 4.5 back. Like, it only feels like it's going to get bigger. Like, there's definitely more anxiety right now watching regular season baseball because you're in a better division for the first time in, like, I don't know, 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more. I would say there's more anxiety, too.
Like, it's just more.
Under 500.
Like, I think, like, now.
In the division.
Like, you look at the standings and you're like, oh, 5 back? Like, already? Like, they got some work to do.
Yeah. I would say they do have some work to do. There's work to do. But, oh, they're still tied for third.
Because I feel like anxiety for me the most, like, when watching sports, it's, there's only one. That, like, I feel extreme anxiety watching a game because one loss kills you.
I think the only
watching
extreme
Notre
anxiety
Dame football for me is, like, my one that just, like, I stress, man.
The only extreme anxiety I get is playoffs or elimination games. That's the only time. Anytime else, I don't get anxiety.
So you don't feel
over
that way for, like, you know.
I mean, I want them to win.
But I'll give
I'm
you
not
an example. Saturday night, the reason why I couldn't sleep because I kept going over in my head all the scenarios in which they could have avoided that. And they could have avoided it, not just getting to that point of the debacle of 8 runs or whatever it was, but the fact that they could have come out with a lead or come out at least even and going over the, you know, the dribblers and the misplays and all the other things. And I guess it's just because I care enough about the team that it kind of grates at me. It's not that I don't think they're going to make the playoffs or they're not going to be okay.
I think there's people that care that don't lose sleep, though.
I just hate, I'm not one of them because I go over in my head, like, what happened and why, and I hate that they lost a game that I feel like they should have won.
Yeah, I hate it, too. Shohei Ohtani, How much? What's that?
It's show.
I mean, I'm not going to lose sleep over a regular season game in May. Like, do I want them to win? Yeah, obviously. But am I going to like lose hours of sleep because they lost a game? Ain't no way. No chance. I value my sleep. How much money does Shohei get this offseason?
Well, I think the starting point is 50.
I think he's going to get to 60.
And I think it might. I think you're going to get several suitors. I think that you're going to find that the Dodgers are going to be in the mix. I think the Cubs might be in the mix. I think the Mets are going to want to be in the mix. I think they're going to get big city, big time dollar teams that are going to push that price tag up through competition. And I think you may see a $60 million a year.
I'll go over 50. Okay.
That's the starting point.
What do you think it's like 10 years, though?
Yeah, I think it's at least 10 years. I think he gets 10 years, $600 million. I think some team's going to pay him that.
I think that's close.
And I think he's worth it if he doesn't get hurt. Now, $600 million to one player that could get hurt is a huge risk, but he's easily worth $30 million as a hitter, and he's easily worth $30 million as a pitcher.
That's what's so hard about the contract is, like, if you sign him for 10 years, does he pitch and hit for 10 years?
I think so, yeah.
Or, like, at some
and
point.
And at what level does he do both? We're talking about Abreu at 36 falling off, but we're also talking about pitchers have different. Sometimes they have a longer lifespan. Sometimes they have a shorter if they lose their fastball.
Like, I wouldn't touch him, but somebody will.
I don't think he does both. I do. I think at some point, one starts to deteriorate, and he focuses on one.
I think part of the allure is that he's a two-way player.
Even though I still, like, kind of love this, like, could, like, Shohei Ohtani be the closer?
Like, you have some multi? Wild takes.
Like, no, like
Shohei Ohtani is a closer?
No, like, in 6 or 7 years. Like, is there a way for him to hit
John
in the Smoltz lineup?
John Smoltz is an example that you could go from big-time starter to a closer.
But could he hit in the lineup and be the closer?
But that's because he had an injury.
You ever seen John Smoltz hit a golf ball? Yeah, he can hit.
I would say...
Like, how does that work? Like,
you see it in college baseball a lot. It happens in college baseball a lot.
Do they leave the game as a hitter, though?
Usually you burn the DH. Okay. Like, so if Shohei's in right field and you're just DHing, let's just say for the sake of the conversation, Hunter Renfroe, and Shohei Ohtani moves to the mound and then Hunter Renfroe comes in to play right field, now you just burn the DH.
Gotcha.
The pitcher bat. So
no, it's
Shohei.
Just like down the road, like if he can't go 67, 80 pitches, but like you've already tied $60 million.
That'd be interesting to see, like, a two-way player be a closer
like, could
in Major
you,
League Baseball.
Could you move him to something else without giving up both? Because like, I just don't think he's going to do both for 10 years.
I think you will. I think it's his
I think
reward.
I think
especially
yeah.
for what you're paying.
Barring
him.
An injury, I think yeah, and especially because I think he honors that contract. I definitely think unless he gets injured, he's going to try.
The bench played a game earlier where they talked about like certain questions, who's the most likely on the on our lineup that would do these things, like who would perform best on the least amount of sleep. They said John Granato. Like most of these answers are John Granato though. So like the bench was talking about all this and all of the answers were John Granato. Which I don't disagree with that one. John Granato probably gets no sleep now. Like, right? Like, he does the morning show and he's up all night. So I would agree.
He still lives his life like a college student in his freshman year.
Yeah, so that one's accurate. It says, who's least likely to pick up the tab, Paul and the producers? I didn't know Paul was a guy who would dodge a tab.
Man,
I don't know
I
if that
like
was fair.
The producers
is probably
fair.
Good.
That's because that's a money thing.
I think
it's
a money thing, yeah. For sure.
I don't know if Paul, I don't think it's fair to have Paul on the list. Here's Paul strikes me. He might forget. But he'd be happy to pick up a tab, I think. Right? Especially with all the dates he goes on. That's part of his life is picking up the tab. Most likely to complain about coming into work, Blankers, Sean, or BK.
How's that me?
Because you complain about everything.
Oh, do I?
Yeah, you even said it on the show the other day. You said you like to complain.
I don't know that I ever said that.
Joe, he said he used
a
different,
that,
he said
Joe?
A different word.
I'll be honest.
He
said
a different word.
I don't remember that conversation.
He said I like to.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm going to plead the fifth.
He said it. He said, I like to be
I also work. Don't miss time for work.
You don't, but you complain about a lot of stuff.
I don't ever complain about working, unless it's you. Other than that, I actually enjoy doing this job. I don't miss work. I don't have a problem with it. I know BK looks for every excuse in the world to miss work.
Yeah, but so, BK's like a walking bit.
Yeah, that's true.
I've never heard Sean complain about anything. Is that fair that Sean's on that list? I don't think that's fair.
That's because Lance was scared to say Joel's name, so he just threw Sean under the bus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know that?
I was listening.
Oh, okay. That's hilarious.
I was really bummed that RJ sent this out because it was basically going to be like
who said
five
it?
Out of five for who said it.
Most likely to be late, Lance. How do you not go Paul there? Like, there's recent examples of Paul being
late. How do you
late.
Not go BK?
Paul was like an hour late for one of his shows once.
Because, so it's BK. Then he said he blamed it on traffic.
Because they talked about Lance forgetting his shoes one time. How do you forget your shoes? You wear shoes.
Yeah, it's weird.
And he had to like
maybe
turn
he left
back
in his office.
And he had to like go back and get shoes.
Don't you remember we all asked the day, Joe, you weren't here yet? Well, we remember the BK was like 20 minutes late for a show and we were just like, how bad was traffic?
Yeah, he did that. So he's got to be BK. Paul did the same thing.
Oh,
Paul,
did he?
Paul was like, he got, well, I think his car broke
PC
down.
PC did it like for a year.
A year?
I mean, sheesh. Okay, well, whatever.
What's the Wheelhouse leading their show with today?
I think it's CJ Stroud's.
I think they intentionally, despite us, did baseball yesterday. I think CJ Stroud's comment.
Oh, I'll go with that too.
Yeah,
they're already opening the door. They're chomping at the bit to talk about CJ Stroud's
AC
video.
He's already doing his like half chuckle.
All right, that's it for us. Thanks to Joe George, hard work. He's Blank on Branham. Talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Wheelhouse next. ESPN 97.5. ESPN 92.5.